It is Thursday, January 8th, and we are in the middle of transfer portal season. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, John Bryce of Football Scoop, and Pete Sampson, The Athletic. And I think I can speak for all four of you by saying I had no idea the middle of transfer portal season would be such a headache, but that is what is going on right now at Notre Dame. It was a little cooler last year when the transfer portal was blissfully away from us and Notre Dame was playing in Miami, but we'll have a question on that a little bit later in this podcast. I could not resist. Guys, before we get into Notre Dame's operational issues with the portal, I think people want to hear first about the most recent visits. So I'm going to list of five guys here I pulled from the board I thought were the most asked about. Priester, we're going to start at the bottom of this one because you just did a film review on him and we talked about him briefly on Monday. Utah's John Henry Daly.
Wow. Really?
Recent status reports here.
Wow. Really good football player. I know he's coming off of Achilles and that, you know, I'm hearing kind of conflicting. He says he's going to be back in 6 months. Well, you know, anybody can say that. They don't know exactly how they're going to feel after 6 months, but man, that kid can play. I mean, you love everything about him. You look at him, you think, okay, well, he's a big kid. He might not be that quick, but he's outstandingly quick, great motor. He does have 2 years of eligibility remaining. So if you only get, is that correct? That is correct, isn't it? Yeah, because he was on a mission. He had a 2-year mission when he went to BYU.
That's right.
So would love to have him on the roster, but I felt the same way about Xavier Gilliam and that, you know, there's a lot of speculation about him going to Tennessee. Keon Keeley, what a strange world that we live in if he returns to Notre Dame. So look, there are 4,500 guys in the portal. There should be 8 guys out there that can help Notre Dame, even defensive tackles, what have you. The issue, though, is that you started so slowly out of the gate that people want answers, and we're going to try to get into that a little bit, but Daly would solve a lot of problems, man. Strong side defensive end, can defend the run, can defend the backside run. Great motor, great quickness. Love everything about that football player.
JB, I'll go to you because they did announce Charlie Partridge. Notre Dame announced the official hiring of Charlie Partridge today. He had a relationship with another defensive tackle portal target for Notre Dame, Francis Brewer, and that was a later portal jump. And I think that could benefit Notre Dame. It's a good thing he wasn't a Friday portal jump last week.
Yeah, exactly. He has a strong relationship with him, is my understanding. Obviously, Partridge has his own very strong reputation for what he's done. And we noted that he has recruited incredibly well through the years, but he's also been able to maintain some of these relationships through the years. You don't find anybody that says a bad word about Partridge. And real quickly on Daly, kind of backing up what TP said, he expressed on his visit to Notre Dame or in his talks with Notre Dame that he expected to be full go by the middle of summer. And I guess not Dr. James Andrews, but James Andrews' facility that he owns, that's who conducted his surgery. When it's my understanding that they were elated with how well it went and that it took less time than even expected. And so there is optimism there. When it's an injury like that, you obviously take a wait and see approach and kind of you'll believe it when you see it. And he's on the field full tilt somewhere in midsummer. But all of those things are encouraging for Daly himself and potentially for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, Daly will be interesting just because I think there's some reporting that he's visiting Michigan right now, played for Kyle Whittingham there in the same way that Gilliam played for
Jim Knowles.
Yeah, Jim Knowles at Penn State last year. And, you know, playing and being recruited by are not the same things with Partridge and Brew, but, you know, those connections matter. I mean, it's like, why did Notre Dame get Will Pauling last year? Because Mike Brown had coached him before. So I think that's why did they have a good shot at Keon Keeley? Because he was committed here for basically a year. So that stuff matters a lot. You know, Keeley, I went down to see him when he was in high school. I mean, he looks the part more than he has probably played the part at Alabama, I think it would be fair to say. But, I mean, where Notre Dame is in the portal right now, where they are with the roster. Like after Bryce Young and Boubacar, like Keon Keeley would be a get off the bus guy. And like they have too many defensive linemen that are not get off the bus guys who have, you know, short arms or, you know, they're just short or, you know, don't play with great leverage. Like Keon Keeley is at least somebody you could work with if you're Partridge, and we would have 2 years with him, I believe, in theory. So I would think that if there's a best of Keon Keeley to get out, Partridge would be a great guy to do it. Obviously, at Notre Dame, Keeley would have a ton of support that he didn't really have at Alabama, you know, with Trey Reeder being here. So that would be, yeah, that would be a really, really significant one for Notre Dame.
Tim, Brew, that is a strong kid, man. That is a strong, strong kid. He's not a big playmaker per se. He's not going to, you know, split a gap. He's not going to, you know, chase like backside and make a play like Daly can do. But that is one strong kid at the point of attack. And considering where they are with defensive tackle, it's like, yeah, you got to have somebody. You got to have some. He's not a big playmaker, but it is ridiculously difficult to try to root him off the football too. He made some plays against Notre Dame. He ate up Otting a couple times. Now, one of them was Lambert. I don't know whose responsibility was what, and Lambert went to the second level and what have you. But it's a strong guy. I prefer Gilliam and Ibaragba more, but you know they are where they're at.
He and Keeley, because of what Pete said too. A lot of the guys they didn't get, you're like, well, man, I thought they were going to get him. Well, shoot, I heard great stuff about that. These are two where you're like, well, now you have the relationship and this absolutely has to happen. Yeah. The other ones are disappointments if you do a film review on them or watch them play football or think Notre Dame needs these positions. This would be like, all right, you can't miss that. You can't miss on this. One guy they could still miss on because he will be coveted. Those Ohio State receivers generally are. I got a note about Mylon Graham before Ohio State lost. Hint, hint. And Mylon Graham Tom Loy has found some information about Mylon Graham. And of course, he was on campus visiting, and that's their chance to bring in a very talented wide receiver for a couple of years. And there are previous relationships here as well, of course. JB, anything new or just any thoughts on Mylon Graham? Because that's an athlete you can work with. And when Ohio State says, well, he couldn't get on the field for us, I say, oh, that's fine. That's fine. He can get on the field elsewhere.
Yeah, and now I think Ohio State has gotten a little nervous and done some stuff to try and get him to stay. But Notre Dame has been much better in the Fort Wayne area with Marcus, and he's obviously a Fort Wayne native, and he would come in and be an immediate contributor and a real asset for Notre Dame's offense. He's got a really, really good catch radius. He's long. He's lengthy. He's got a lot of good attributes that I think C.J. Carr particularly would love to be able to work with.
There's a few questions on the board about, could you give a quick rundown of who Notre Dame, to be polite about this, who Notre Dame didn't mind losing and who they might have minded losing? So, Pete Sampson, thank you for the list. I'm going to go ahead and say names where you guys just raise your hand if you object, but they did not mind losing. That's part of business, I'm sorry. And you know what? They paid these guys a lot of money to be there for a while. Anthony Sacca, Scrap Richardson, Bodie Cahoon, Cree Thomas, Ben Binnick, Chance Tucker because of his injuries, Jadon Blair, Jabron Payne was always going, Tabron Benny Powell, and they knew Kenny Minchie obviously was going to be leaving. That, not that you don't mind losing Kenny Minchie, but that's not a possibility in most eyes. And then you could probably throw Carson Hobbs. I'm sure there are discussions more with Carson Hobbs than maybe some of the other guys. But any objections to me saying that Notre Dame was okay, that those guys entered the portal with time to play somewhere else?
No objections for me.
I think that's almost the exact list that maybe you and first discussed back in early December, T.O.
One guy not on that list, JB, because I asked you and you had never heard. This is the only reason it surprised me, because I would have made it logically to me. K.K. Smith would have a decision to make coming into the portal season. But then we heard K.K. Smith was not on the decision to make list. So that's the only reason K.K. Smith is a surprise to me. I think if you're fifth, I put Micah Gilbert ahead of K.K. Smith going into a new year. If you're fifth going into that final, well, he has 2 years left, but as a senior, there's a natural decision to make there.
Yeah, and it was indicated that they kind of thought he would stick around, and he played more down the stretch. Marcus was very complimentary of him late in the season. I think they felt like he was developing into a very solid role contributor in the wide receiver rotation. So that one was a little bit surprising based on at some point in the fall, we thought that was going to happen. By the time the regular season concluded, we thought it wasn't going to happen. And then bam, it did happen. Especially then, you know, when you don't get a Nick Marsh and you don't get some of the other guys that you've identified in the portal, that one is magnified a bit for sure.
And, you know, we never got a chance to see Anthony Sacca. I don't know that that was ended up being a great fit for Notre Dame. And so that's, you know, that's not a shock. Preston Zinter was misused from day one.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Zinter, like when JB made a great point there with KK Smith, like if you said to me in November, well, Preston Zinter transfer, like, well, yeah, he's going to have to transfer because he's behind too many people and he's a good football player. But the core special teams guy, and Tim Priester, you say misused from day one as a backup linebacker, you mean tight end.
I mean, let's say I guessed and I got it right, but I love Preston Zinter coming out of high school as a tight end. I thought it was just a more natural position for him. Where I thought he played free and easy at tight end, whereas a linebacker, he was, you know, obviously different reads and keys and stuff. But I thought tight end was his best position. They had an opportunity to make that move, I think, a little bit earlier in the process, and then didn't, and then did, and then didn't, if that makes any sense. It doesn't.
Well, I think the tough thing for Zinter is sometimes there's always going to be, this isn't news, but there's going to be splits in evaluations of people. And the split on Zinter was pretty important. Like, he was wanted back, and now he's not coming back. That's the best way of saying it without, I mean, Preston Zinter was desired back by people inside the football.
On both sides of the football,
as Tim Priester pointed out.
And I think of all the guys who have left so far, like Burnham, at least I understand. You're just like, I'm not starting. I'm going to make more somewhere else. Pat Coogan's having a good time. I'm going to do that. Zinter seems like, you know, maybe he would do this a year from now. But until then, you could have had him as your number one special teams player. And whether he saw a single rep at tight end or defensive end or linebacker just doesn't matter. If he never played a down on either side of the ball and was just special teams, he is certainly one of your most 105 valuable guys. Is he one of your 60 most valuable guys? You probably, like,
probably, yeah.
In counting down the Irish, where would Preston Zinter have ended up?
Yeah, no, a lot higher than 105. No, the number one special teams player, and that's not theoretical. That's already been proven, JB. I mean, he was already the number one special teams player. He'd be coming back for more.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a program that devotes a lot to special teams and will consider special teams players for captain roles and things like that. So, yeah, coaches from both sides of the ball.
Like Preston Zinter.
Yeah, exactly. Coaches from both sides of the ball had talked to him of late. I think the head ball coach also had talked to him of late. To me, the Preston Zinter situation in a lot of ways is a microcosm to this point of Notre Dame's portal process in general.
We'll get to the portal process in general, but a hiring, Kenny Sanders to assistant general manager. By the way, the best quote on the board immediately was, is that assistant general manager or assistant to the general manager from the office? One of my all-time favorite quotes. Assistant general manager, and then JB, you let us know DJ Bryant would be hired in a capacity of general managerial types also as well, under Mike Martin.
Yeah, a lot of recruiting and personnel-centric work for him, and it's my understanding they've reshuffled duties on Jordan Blake, that occurred in recent weeks. So the first inkling I got that Notre Dame was getting ready to make changes and enhancements to its personnel department was even before Christmas. I got a call from an agent in Nashville, actually, who said, hey, dog, did somebody leave Notre Dame personnel? And I was like, not that I know of. And he goes, well, they're hiring this spot. And I was like, that's really interesting. So I said, let me check into that. And I checked into that. And you checked into that, T.O., and we both heard the same thing, that some stuff was being shuffled around, maybe taken off the plate of Jordan Blake so that they could make some of these other subsequent moves.
Could have been something done, as we were about to discuss earlier, perhaps. The portal, Tim Priester, I think you had this in Thursday Thoughts. Thursday Thoughts went up. I was driving here to do this podcast, and I briefly saw it. But the issue that Notre Dame, the joke that we were all making, because Notre Dame didn't host anybody on the first weekend, I know it was an overblown joke. I couldn't stop using it. But it's not a joke anymore that Notre Dame didn't host anybody on the first weekend of the transfer portal, which, reminder, that was the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and they set up all their visits for the 5th. My thought was they got caught with their pants down a little because in regular recruiting, you want the last visit. In portal recruiting, when you're grown men and you're handing people checks for $500,000, you want the first visit.
It's key. All right. So what day of the week did the portal open?
Friday. Last Friday.
Yeah, it was Friday. Yep.
Okay. Friday. You think, is that a coincidence that it's Friday, or is there some correlation between it opens on Friday so you can host players on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? I'm making light of it, but I it's hard to comprehend when, and I think it's a good point that, you know, you need to be first as far as visits with portal guys, as opposed to, you know, last when it's a high school recruit. But I mean, isn't that's a little bit self-explanatory, a little bit kind of just common sense that, especially like you said, you got to, I got a check in hand. Do you want it? You know, so it's really hard to fathom how the portal could open on Friday, and for whatever reason, and there might be multiple reasons have been offered, but for whatever reason, Notre Dame didn't start entertaining visitors until 3 days later. And that is the most, the wall's crumbling down, that's the 72 hour wall, so to speak, that it was just a huge missed opportunity.
Well, and so many other programs had stuff buttoned down and done before the portal technically opened. So,
which Notre Dame's done before.
Correct. Exactly.
They've done it with quarterbacks.
Notre Dame's done it every year.
Yeah.
Done it very effectively. Like, you know, had Malachi Fields done way in advance last year.
Might have been done before Hartman, if that's possible.
Yeah. It might have been done in 2020. We don't know. That's what I mean. but one of you guys made the point the other day about how even when the portal opens and you can host portalers on official visits, they're so unimportant compared to their high school official visits. And so then I checked that with some agents this week, including an agent from a firm that has more than 200 high school and college NIL reps between the portal and high school players now signing deals going into their college careers. And he just was very candid and said, like, for the most part, these deals are done before a guy steps foot on campus, and the whole trip to campus is to just check things out and make sure they're okay. And he indicated to me, and he's worked with Notre Dame in the past, he may have a couple of current Notre Dame players in his, well, in fact, I know that his company has some current Notre Dame players. And he just said that Notre Dame was late to the party in a lot of cases, and that guys already had deals done and they were so far down the road, they didn't even want to take the time, even if they liked Notre Dame. And a lot of them said specifically they liked Marcus Freeman. They were so far down the road, they were already in their mind committed, not only verbally committed, but they were just committed to what the next step was going to be.
Pete, before you weigh in, I want to say, JB, that is the perfect lead into Kramer. You're not really going to California, are you? In my mind, I'm already gone.
I'm already gone.
Yeah. I mean, that was always the joke. Like, you know, with Sam Hartman's watching Notre Dame film in the Wake Forest locker room. Like, it's, you get ahead of the, if you're not ahead of the game, it's waiting for the portal to open is kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a fool's errand, right? Like, it's
on time,
you know,
is late.
From rounders, it's like, you know, Mike McDee, it's like, if you can't spot the sucker at the table in the first 5 minutes, you're the sucker. Like, I feel like Notre Dame was, they've been the sucker. And that's, you know, it's not like they can't pull themselves out of it. They still have resources to burn, brand, a very popular head coach, and God knows they've got two really big needs. So there's jobs here too. So, you know, if they end up with Brew and Keeley and a receiver, whether it's Graham or somebody else, they'll be fine. And a kicker, they'll be fine. But I think the process to get from point A to point B has got to be something Marcus Freeman takes a look at and be like, wait a minute, this wasn't how it was run before. Why wasn't it run again? And, you know, I know people are kind of banging on Mike Martin a little bit here, but like, they just finished with a top three recruiting class. They signed what, like 11 of 12 uncommitted official visitors. Like, that part of the operation seemed to be going pretty well.
Yeah.
So it's not, I don't think it's just like, oh, blow the whole thing up. Or I think overall, I feel like people have overreacted to this, but I understand there being some angst about it.
I want to, because I wrote this, I think, maybe I never published it. This is an important feeling I have just for our message board is not a place to be right now. Not a good place to be. It hasn't been for a while, but on the portal. Notre Dame fans have a right to be upset about the transfer portal in 2026. As of right now, midway through for Notre Dame, one third of the way through, midway through for the rest of college football, because in 2023, 2024, and 2025, Notre Dame had successful portal seasons. They should have a successful portal season in 2026 as well. This is not their first go round in the portal. Whether you like how everybody played out in 2023, they might have won the portal with Sam Hartman. In 2024, it was pretty damn close with Riley Leonard and the guys they got. And last year, nobody was complaining about Malachi Fields, Will Pauling, Jared Dawson. I know it wasn't as good because you didn't have the quarterback, but they won portal season for their program's needs three straight years. You should expect them to win it four straight years. I am with the fans on that one.
Well, and again, you knew on December 7th that you were not in the playoffs and you were not playing a bowl game. I misspoke in our last podcast, but it was actually December 7th that they knew that. And so that was, I mean, we can keep going over it. It's like, you're kind of incredulous as to how, and Pete's absolutely right. I mean, I keep writing it that this doesn't have to be a disaster. Now I really thought Xavier Gilliam was a key for them because that's a guy with 3 years of eligibility.
He's not signed though. So, I mean, things.
Well, that's true. Okay. That's true. But you know, crystal balls and what have you, some people in the know have done that. And that's true. I mean, that would be, if that's a guy that they can pull back in, so to speak, I would love it because I think the upside there, I mean, how often do they get a guy that has 3 years of eligibility? I'd love to see him in Notre Dame.
Get Kenny Minchie's agent to pull him back into the situation. That guy's never stops working.
Yeah. Just like as of Wednesday night, and this has all changed as we record on Thursday, but these are the total portal additions for Ohio State: 1, Georgia 1, Oregon 1, Notre Dame 0, BYU 0, Miami 0. It's not the end of the world, but yeah, it's a process issue. I would sort of equate this to, like, you ever go on your message board in the middle of the second quarter when Notre Dame's down 10-0?
No, what? No, I don't. Why?
Okay. I feel like that's what's happened. Like, Notre Dame is down 10-0 in the second quarter. The live money line, they're still favored to win the game. But they're definitely down 10-0 in the second quarter, and people are ticked off. And I get it, but there is still quite a bit of road to travel here.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say as I look at my notes here from one of the agents I spoke with late Tuesday night, I think, was his point was like, look, the schedule is unequivocally aligned for Notre Dame to run all the way to the college football playoff this coming season, 2026. And you've known you're not playing since December 7th. How are you not ahead of the curve? How are you not shopping a la carte and getting exactly everything you need? And then he really, really hammered home this point. He just said, there are zero tampering repercussions right now in college football. It's not shady anymore. There are legal ways to do it all. Notre Dame is showing this cycle it has not adapted as well to that.
There is no Markinson. We've said it a lot. And guys, I want to charge you with this real fast because I think it's relevant and it's going to get lost in the questions. I don't have an answer. Let's the four of us try to get an answer for next Monday's podcast. Academic calendar at Notre Dame shows classes begin, of course, January 12, 13. Portal closes 15th. Does that affect the undergraduate recruitment next week of people, or is there a nice little alleviation? If you can get into Notre Dame, you can start classes on the 18th and 19th.
I believe January 15th is the last day you can make any schedule changes for the spring semester at Notre Dame. So that's just one day before the portal closes. It's so that does give you a couple of extra days, but I tried to research that before we hopped on here. And based on the Notre Dame academic calendar that I found online, I'll just read you exactly what it says. And on January 15th, emailed to students informing them of last day for schedule changes, and then law and graduate business will be notified by their respective college or school. But
I don't think graduate students is going to be a problem for that thing. But
correct.
That's a thing. Got it. That's another reason to get ahead of the game and get moving. But we'll be back to talk more about the transfer portal and even other things. Oh, yeah, want something, JB?
Yeah, but it does say, now that maybe that's for current students to make a change. The last day to add spring classes is January 20th. And the last day to use web registration is January 20th until 11:59 p.m. And it's also the last day to declare pass-fail option or part-time student status.
What you're saying is, what's the rush?
We'll be back with segment two, burning up the boards. With the college football playoffs in full swing and the NFL about to begin, I've been looking to find the best deal on tickets, both for family and friends, but also as a memorable gift idea. That's why I want to offer the sponsor of today's Burning Up the Boards, SeatGeek, a huge shout-out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. So whether you're an Irish fan looking for a ticket to the AC/DC concert in September, or any of NFL playoff matchups down the road, SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. Look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad, but every ticket is backed by a buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use Irish10, that's all capital letters on the number 10, for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. 10% off any tickets with the promo code Irish10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek. Our first question comes from Top Relax. I'm glad we have a full house for this one. Save for the George O'Leary debacle, how does this month, he actually said week, but I've decided to make month in here, compare to some of the most bizarre off seasons in your time covering the Irish?
Pete, not top 10. I mean, this is nothing. Absolutely. Like, I wonder if Top Relax has been as a lifetime Notre Dame fan since last year. Like, it's, I mean, the 2013 offseason, starting with the Alabama game, Brian Kelly interview with the Eagles, Manti Te'o Lanei Kukua, starting quarterback Everett Golson gets suspended for the year. Like,
Eddie Vanderdos was put
on board. I mean, that's like, nothing. Yeah. This is nothing compared to that. There have been so many bizarre off-season weeks and months. I mean, I remember there was, I mean, 2011, they had, I think, they had like 5 decommitments in a week or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. That was
that. They've had recruiting catastrophes. What, I mean, I don't know. Brian Kelly leaving for LSU.
Yeah.
I mean, that... compared to not getting a portal addition in 5 days, like we're not even close to, like,
I do want to point out, every time we say Eddie Vanderdos, for people that don't know the story, the reason it was so weird, it's not the grandmother and all the stuff that he had to be, you know, that's why he decommitted. It's that we showed up for signing day in February. He was not signed yet. He was on Notre Dame's list, officially handed out to the media. So everyone there goes, oh, wow, they got Vanderdos. No, they had not. And yeah. That was why the Vanderdos thing took
clerical off. Error.
You could not have reported it more on message boards. I mean, that's almost like, we have to go leave this press conference because this is the big news that they got Eddie Vanderdos.
Yeah. They had to regather the press releases
to
take from the media. Like, we're gonna need that back.
Pass it on. Everybody on your end, pass it that way.
The Isbin Auditorium.
It's like a classroom.
I mean, we're in that auditorium 1 year earlier hearing them cursing when Deontay Greenberry called to tell him he was going to Houston instead of Notre Dame. You could hear them screaming up in the office.
Look, this is if it's happening in Notre Dame, it's happening everywhere. These kind of things happen. There are a billion moving parts with a major college football program, and this happens. Some of the stuff... you know, some of the stuff that we heard earlier this week, it seems like, you know, that was preventable. A lot of times some of these things just aren't, just by the nature of the magnitude of what everybody's trying to accomplish here.
Andy Ludwig at the hockey game. I mean, come on.
You just thought of it. It's like,
What'd Pete say about this? This is like shooting fish in a barrel. You should just keep shooting, Pete. Go ahead. Yeah.
I feel like in 25 years covering the team, about 24 off seasons have had a month worse than this one. Like,
yeah, this is just so much speculation, I think, with Marcus. But we didn't think Marcus was not coming back this year either. I mean, I want to point out, no one here ever said Marcus would not be back in 2026. We were just like, all right, sign the contract. Let's go sign the contract.
Yeah.
As you guys know, he's going to run it back. So that's all that you need to know. Our next question, and this is putting a positive on it, I think, Irish gunslinger. There is still time for movement, of course, but how should fans feel about the lack of changes on the football coaching staff to date? Even with the slow early portal action, shouldn't most exciting thing about this offseason be the consistency of the football staff on account of retaining coaches that could have gotten promotions elsewhere, not needing to separate poor performers? or should we expect more turnover before kickoff 2026?
Anytime Mike Martin's still on your coaching staff, it's like, okay, that's a huge win. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, yeah, that's a positive. There were so Mike many Mickens. Negatives. What'd I say? Mike Martin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mike Mickens. Yeah. Otherwise, it changes the tenor of this
entire thing. Yeah, it absolutely does. Mike Mickens. Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, and that's good. You lost Max Bulla, but you get Charlie Partridge. And we talked about this the other day, that anytime you become better, you have a better coach and instructor along the defensive line. I think that's more important than linebacker. Yeah, it's good. It's important. It's continuity. But when most of December you're uncertain about whether the head coach is coming back, it's kind of hard to look at, oh, hey, the assistant coaches are still all in place. But point taken.
Yeah, I mean, look, Marcus got Al Golden to coordinate his defense for his first 3 years. Now he's poised to have Mike Denbrock finally leading the offense for a third year in a row, and for the first time ever to have the same starting quarterback 2 years in a row. And you got a guy in Charlie Partridge, as I shared on Monday, that just like people go out of their way to praise him as a coach, as a recruiter, as an individual human being. Like, so yeah, I think you've done some great things there. And then, not to overplay it, but obviously keeping Trey Reeder is huge, because I would think that corresponded directly with the ability to start talking to Keon Keeley this week and having him schedule his visit to South Bend.
You figure, somebody asked this question on the board, it's end of February is when you start to feel a little safe in terms of coaches not moving on?
Yeah, I wouldn't be like, could an NFL team, like Mike Brown, for example, has some NFL experience as a player. I've heard that like that's something that's intriguing to him. So it just takes one right to be like, hey, we'd like you to come on. But I think both coordinators back, Mickens back, obviously Washington is back. I think they're in a really good spot. Is Joe Rudolph going to get an NFL look? I don't know, but I think you always got to be on the lookout for that.
Slater turned down Florida.
Notre Dame has a really good coaching staff, and other teams, college and pro, are going to want to kick the tires on these assistants. So this would fall under a good problem to have. But I think that once the NFL cycle, I think you got to wait to that to feel 100% certain.
Maybe this is you for a famous name, your favorite handler. Yeah.
And this one's a little bit painful because the questioner's name is Bryce's Burner. And for those of you not aware, my Twitter has been hacked.
What's up, Elon?
Apparently I'm the damn CEO of Twitter, but without the paycheck, or I wouldn't be visiting with you guys. So from Bryce's Burner, in an effort to switch gears from the feared portal season, can we address the upside of Aeneas Williams becoming RB1? Essentially, he is outstanding upside. He's proven a third down back with short yardage experience, trusted pass blocking skills, above average receiving skills, and the ability to break the big one. He also was trusted against elite competition as a true freshman. O'Malley, you've asked the most questions, so let's start with you as we open the floor.
The first on the train of the Aeneas Williams bandwagon, but I think I would be elated if Aeneas Williams was 1B. I would be elated if I think it's great that Aeneas Williams stayed and he can be Notre Dame's number one back, but I hope they have let him be 1A. I want Aeneas Williams to be 1A, and I need to know who 1B is going to be. They do need a 1B.
They do. I mean, it's.
He might be on the roster. I just don't know who he is.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that you want to put a whole lot of stock into Javion Osborne as a true freshman being 1B on a national championship contending team in theory. But I'm not saying that I wouldn't do that either. If there's a position to like, okay, let's roll the dice on Kedron Young, Nolan James Jr., Javion Osborne, Jonas Walton, like, I think running back is a fine place to do that. But I'm with you. You need more than Aeneas Williams.
You're spoiled by the breakaway ability of the two guys that you had. I mean, I Aeneas Williams doesn't have that type of breakaway ability. I think, Kedron Young could be an interesting 1B or however you want to designate him. Yeah. I don't think you have to go out and, if you want a big time running back, he's going to cost a lot, and you've got other needs here. I don't think that's necessary. I just, people need to be prepared that you're not going to have these 58-yard runs on the consistent basis that you had with Love and Price.
And, you know, the running back position is one that around college football, you see guys doing it. Wasn't Bo Jackson a true freshman this year for Ohio State? And he was their leading rusher and played a huge role for them. So, yeah, I'm very intrigued. People that know a lot more, that have studied a lot more film, and they're a lot smarter than me, are really high on J.O., as they call him, Javion Osborne. So I think he will be a contributor for Notre Dame in 2026. And how quickly he adapts will probably determine if he's in that 1B role or a 2BC role.
Yeah. It's kind of reckless. Look, and you've got time to bring him along, too. You're not opening with Miami and A&M.
Yeah, that's not a coach saying it would be coaching malpractice for me to put him in, like Dylan said about Aeneas in College Station in his right. opening. And it's because he's like, yeah, he can protect the passer, but it's just the time we wanted to make sure he picks up all the signals. You know, that's not the case with Lambo.
There's kind of a reckless abandon approach to the way Javion Osborne runs the football. I like it. I like it. I mean, I think Notre Dame fans are going to like that.
Well, what nobody picked up on during that question, sorry, is that Pete Sampson just disrespected Luke Fickell in Wisconsin like that.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Priester, I think you can skip question four because it was about Mike Martin. Okay. Move on to question five. Although if you want to add the funny educations joke, you can feel free to do that when you read.
Yeah, funny education had a very pointed 5 or 6 word question. Does the assistant general manager work weekends? But we're going to move on to question five from IC Gold. Several times on this podcast, there have been discussions about renegotiating deals with current players where player X, let's say Tay Johnson, will be getting a raise. But in order to do so, player Y, Jadon Blair, is told his NIL rev share will be reduced. Do other serious title contenders manage their rosters as such?
Yes, my understanding is you overpay on the front end to get the guys in and you're paying more on potential. And then after you get them there, you determine after a year whether it's been money well spent or whether you need to start scaling that back and looking to spend that money elsewhere, be it the next freshman class or, you know, some programs use the transfer portal. So I think that's one thing to consider, but I do think other programs, I can tell you, I know for a fact there are SEC programs that do this. I mean, Tennessee just let Lance Hurd walk because his asking price was too large at offensive tackle. And he's the guy that they paid insane money to get from LSU a year ago. And the guy that's a former top 100 prospect or widely considered just a couple of years ago to be a potential first round draft pick at the offensive tackle. And Tennessee just let him walk. Kentucky initially offered Cutter Bowley around $2.1-2.2 million to return. And there were talks about keeping him even after Will Stein took over for Mark Stoops. And then Kentucky said, you know, we're going to see what's out there and you might still get that, but you might not. So if you want to enter the portal because of that, you can. And Cutter Bowley entered the portal and went to Arizona State and got paid over $2 million. And Kenny Minchie was headed first to Boston College, is my understanding. And then he was headed to Nebraska. And then Kentucky got him on the phone and did what Cignetti did last weekend with Nick Marsh and just said, we have you here. Like, what's the number? Like, we're not getting off the phone until we have an agreement. That's the way it was put to me. And that's how Kentucky got Kenny Minchie. So I do think that's happening. And look, Nebraska was not willing to continue paying Dylan Raiola the same rate that he had been getting. So, yeah, I think this is really much more commonplace than it was 3 or 4 years ago. And it's becoming more and more commonplace everywhere. As long as there are no guardrails, as long as players want to sign only 1 year deals and want them loaded with guarantees, then schools are going to respond accordingly.
You know, if you're going to get a player in, you're going to have to overpay for him for that 1 year.
Yeah. Look, it's always more expensive to acquire in the portal than it is in recruiting. This is kind of how it is.
You're up, JB.
Oh, yes, I am. Thank you. Question number six. We are flying along here. EDOC 2344. What do those numbers mean? What impact might portal entries like Preston Zinter and Bodie Cahoon have on the special teams? Given the number of underclassmen entering the portal, is 4 for 40 still a big selling point? TP, let's start with you.
Well, I don't know about Bodie Cahoon, but definitely Preston Zinter. The whole 40 for 40 thing is pretty hard. I mean, it resonated for so long. It was a great phrase. Who came up with that, Tim? Do you know?
BK, right?
Was it BK? He actually came up with that?
That's, well, I mean, he took credit for it. No, I was kidding. It was during his. It was during his.
It was during his reign. Okay, yeah. No, I mean, 4 for 40 in many cases doesn't exist anymore.
I saw on the board someone wrote, "Should they change it to 4 for 400,000?"
That's not nearly enough.
400. Yeah. Are you a long snapper?
Yeah, back 400K. Up tight end. 400K. Yeah, exactly.
To answer the question, I mean, the Zinter is a huge hit at special teams. We made a joke about how many off air, how much more valuable he is than half the remaining roster. But if you want to go to, like, let's drill down to guys like, you know, you have Cahoon. If he had, gosh, I can't even find him. So he didn't have that many snaps on special teams. But he was set to have snaps on special teams. I think that's what the point is. Like, guys like Teddy Rezac, Bodie Cahoon, that keep going through the program, become your special teams valuable players, or they should be let go. That's, if you can't be a special teams contributor as a linebacker in his third year, you should not be part of the Notre Dame football program in the modern era or even 10 years ago.
Yeah, you got to create value for yourself by that point. And if you haven't, then I totally understand Notre Dame moving on from you. Preston Zinner had created value for himself. Bodie Cahoon had not yet. You know, and I think, O'Malley, you listed off the guys who had left. Like, most of them had not done anything to warrant Notre Dame paying them any NIL. So, you know, then, yeah, it kind of doubles back to the previous question. You take that money and you spend it on players who are contributing. That makes perfect sense.
Cahoon was on kick coverage, but including every special team, he was 35th on the roster in special team snaps. But guys that moving on to junior year should be your guys that are going to be your core special teamers, that's for sure. So it's a good question, but they will also bring in, assuming this, graduate students that can play special teams. Like, you can bring in Jalen Stroman and he plays special teams along with playing safety on your team. That's part of it too, because the graduate students they bring in should be having an eye towards the NFL special teams as well. Like, this is how you're going to make the NFL. Jalen Stroman, you got to be good at special teams to make the NFL. There's 150 of you coming out in the draft. So you got to be good at special teams when you hit into a camp.
I do still think the 4 for 40 matters, because look at the prep signing class that Notre Dame just pulled in, and it's the highest rated of the modern college football era. But most guys are graduating in 3 years, so maybe from 4 for 40, it should go from 3 to eternity. I don't know.
3.5. Yeah, it is a. That's what's so interesting about if you get 5 years to play, that's great, but it's going to be a weird balance for coaches, because you don't want all your players there 5 years either. You really don't want all your players there either. You have to get younger and you have to bring in more talent.
All right, we have a question from Hobbs 924. I know I am too late, so answer when you can. Has anyone on staff had any interaction with Coach Freeman since the committee debacle? If not, is that typical for he and or Notre Dame to not have any interaction with reporters this time of year? Last year, we were in Miami with them.
Yeah, I want to go first on this one because I did a quick research and Tom, the intern, did some a couple weeks ago. So when this question was really being asked before Marcus had announced he was coming back, obviously, like, why is he, shouldn't you have talked to him by now? There's a small window here. There's only like 14 Power Four programs that did not play in a bowl and did not fire their coach. You fire your coach, you have to have a press conference for the next coach. So this only applies to people coming back. Only one had a press conference after signing day. So it wasn't weird that Marcus didn't talk all of December. I look back, and excluding last year, because all we did was talk to coaches and each other for an entire month, most of the time, Brian Kelly would have a January 31st, would be the earliest after his bowl game. The little change here is that was right before signing day. So he was probably doing it on purpose, because you don't want to talk to the media about your coaching staff changes and everything, but you want to have signing day as a separate entity. So Kelly never talked until that January 31, or even sometimes after February. It's just, this is the time they don't talk to people. They announced Washington's move and Partridge's hiring today officially. I don't know if we'll have a press conference for Partridge.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's not a coordinator. You know, when you get two new coordinators, you have a press conference and you introduce your two new coordinators. I don't even know if they'll have a press conference. Maybe if they end up hiring, like if a bunch of coaches leave or something, they would have to have a press conference for the new ones. But I think Freeman's doesn't need to talk until the spring. Why would he talk? I guess he could have a State of the Union in February somewhere, right?
I think it would be after Notre Dame for him to do something. Maybe after the national championship
game. After the national championship game. Yeah. Because you've started school, you have a roster.
Right? Yeah. I mean, they do, because they do, they typically under Freeman have sort of done like a newcomers media day.
January, February.
Right. So maybe something early February. What I wouldn't do, not that anyone needs my advice, is let this run until the start of spring practice. I think that would be a strategic mistake.
But it's not that weird that he hasn't spoken.
No, definitely not. And like I said, especially, you know, we were interacting with him throughout January just because of the circumstances last year. But
we have a great final question on that one. I'm pretty sure if you haven't seen it yet, I love it. So this one, though, is from Backer Tiki. Really interesting question because it's different this year than last year. Of a team's top 30 players, what is the ideal split between recruits and portal acquisitions? Top 30 is offense, defense, and top backup.
Yeah, I don't know, 22-8, 21-9.
Oh, I think it's much higher towards your internal roster. Like we had a story in The Athletic just basically on the 12 playoff teams about how many starts were from portal players, how many starts were high school recruits. Georgia was number one at like 90% homegrown. Notre Dame would have been number two, I think, at about 85-86%.
And Ohio State would be pretty high on that, right?
Ohio State was not nearly as high as I thought.
Oh, yeah, because last year they were the number one on that.
Yeah, well, they were like in the 60s or the 70s.
Don't you anticipate virtually all of your portal guys being starters?
I mean, Ty Washington started four games, Jalen Stroman. So, I mean, not really. Some of them will. I mean, Malachi 35. Fields. Will Pauling, I think, started seven games.
So you're saying more of a
Will Pauling's top 30 for sure. Like if you're looking
at Notre
Dame's team. Yeah. So you're saying more of a split like 24-6 or 23-7 or even.
Yeah, I'd say
even more.
Kind of an 80-20 or 85-15 in terms of percentages.
Four out of every five, yeah.
Yeah.
I think one way of looking at it also is if you're seven guys, if two of them are Will Howard and Quinshon Judkins in the championship game. Those were their portal acquisitions, and that mattered a lot more than anything else that they were doing.
Caleb Downs.
So, other than Jeremiah Smith, those three were a very big deal in that game.
And technically, last year would have also been Lorenzo Styles, you know? So, there was that. I mean, he was a
transfer. He was different than Jeremiah Smith, but you're right. That's true.
Yeah, he was a transfer to Ohio State. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm with Pete on this, and it's similar to the question we addressed on Monday, what we think is better positions a program for sustained competitiveness in the college football playoff era. And I still think it's when you're home growing most of your roster. And when you look out here next year, Notre Dame is touting that it's going to return, 15 or 16 starters, you know, and that's a lot. And almost literally every single one of those guys is homegrown, especially when you talk about CJ Carr and the entire offensive line and Aeneas Williams, and presumably it seems Jaden Greathouse and Jordan Faison and Leonard Moore and KVA and Drake Bowen and all of that.
Currently they're all homegrown, JB. So
yeah.
There's no way around it.
All right. Question number nine. Do your job, 2-3. Based on comments about pay cuts for rising sophomores in the new era of NIL churning guys out, could a career path like Xavier Watts even happen now? This is a great question.
Yeah, go ahead, Pete.
I think so. I think it could. I mean, this would be a much more difficult situation because, like, he was 3 years into it, he had done nothing, right? Yeah.
Switched positions twice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, it was his the end of it, the last month of his junior year was when he started to turn it on.
Yeah.
So maybe I think every player probably gets 3 years. And I mean, we were just talking about Preston Zinner, like Xavier Watts had done enough in that last month where you're like, okay, this is a guy we're going to invest in. So I think probably a Xavier Watts career would still happen, but I'll tell you what careers wouldn't happen. Lewis Nix, Stephon Tuitt, like Manti Te'o probably wouldn't happen. Like they're just the exit doors for the transfer portal, I think make it very difficult on some of those. Like those are incredible Notre Dame stories to be written in full.
Before everything is all said and done, I don't know who, Maybe I have an inkling, but I don't know who exactly it'll be, but some great, great player from a very, very good program is going to leave that program just for simply more money at another. I mean, like top dollar. What's happening with quarterbacks now?
So you're saying, not to interrupt you, Tim, but you're saying Carson Beck didn't do that. They kind of didn't want Carson Beck. He could get more money elsewhere.
Right. No, I'm talking about a guy at the top of his game.
Caleb Downs, but not a freshman. Yeah. C.J. Carr. So you're saying someday the C.J. Carr.
Jeremiah Smith.
Okay.
Well,
I mean, look, Jeremiah Love had offers to go.
That's a good point, Pete. That is about to happen. I keep writing these stories about the state of college football. I seem to be, you know, so concerned about it collapsing or something, but it's the excess is going to, it's going to explode. It's going to implode. I don't know how you keep pace with it. And then, you know, how do you keep 136 team FBS?
That can't be done.
It can't be done. The Kansases and the Kansas States and the Iowa States, the rich are going to get richer and the poor are going to get poorer. It's just going to be harder for them to compete. I realize it's already difficult for them to compete, but I'm just disappointed that it's gotten so far out of hand and will continue to just get worse.
But really quickly, and I'm not being flippant, you're going to watch tonight, right?
Yeah.
And so are a lot of people.
Yeah, no.
Well, their numbers in these playoffs are insane. Your numbers are nuts.
No,
the rich will get richer, like Priester said, much like Indiana.
Well, no, what happens is there a new group of rich is created.
No, there's no doubt. Texas Tech.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, the richest team not to score in the history of the college football playoff.
They're just getting started.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point, but I also want to put a bow on it by saying Tim Priester actually said Jeremiah Smith is going to be the guy. So that's why they're looking to wide receiver. There is.
I was thinking, okay, what's the peak I could
do? He is the peak. You're right, though. Jeremiah Smith, Jeremiah Love.
Someone like that.
Whereas just like Pete, you said Manti Te'o even. Like peak, Manti Te'o could have been like, I just played for a team that went 6-6, 8-5, and 8-5. And Alabama is, well, they wouldn't have. Tennessee is offering me $4 million to leave Notre Dame for my senior year. He might have wanted to go. What if he was losing his coach? He would have bounced for sure at that point. Like that's, I shouldn't say Manti, but you know, that type of player, that their team had no success until his last year.
That's about to happen within the next, what do we got left? Nine days.
But it'll be okay unless you root for that team. Final question from Matt Smith. This is great off Twitter. Based on last 2 years' experience, is Miami, Florida, or South Bend, Indiana, the more enjoyable place to be in the second week of January covering your sport? JB, go ahead. with a little, you're in the happy medium there, JB, right now.
Yeah, exactly. No, that one, I'm not a fan of Miami at all, but it's not a bad spot to spend 72 hours and cover a high stakes game and break bread with Deglin and hang out with good people.
Deglin Tyler, gets a shout out.
Have a fun argument with Tyler Horka about which is the real UT, which everyone knows is the University of Tennessee, founded 100 years before Texas, and Texas basically owes its statehood to Tennessee. But that's a history podcast, not sports.
I had a conversation with Tyler Horka at the Fort Lauderdale Hotel as well. And if he's listening, he remembers that conversation and exactly where we were sitting. Go ahead, Tim.
I don't think Tyler's listening to our podcast, but
he's going to now.
Was there a better time than 2012 in Miami?
Last year was fun.
Yeah.
As we record this podcast, it's
47 degrees in South Bend. As I look back at the box score of the Orange Bowl, it was 56 degrees last year. And also, we were talking about Marcus Freeman access. Today is the one-year anniversary of the James Franklin Marcus Freeman day before Orange Bowl presser, which was like the most interesting day before bowl presser of all time.
Without even words being said on one side of it. I got a note on my Facebook that is the 13-year anniversary yesterday of Alabama Notre Dame in the game you're talking about, Priester. Priester, I misheard you. Yes, the first trip to Miami was the most fun of all time because we had 5 days there and they were catering.
Now, I mean, you know, what we experienced last year was, I mean, that's magical stuff, you know. I mean, even right down to the tragedy in New Orleans and, you know, pushing everything back a day. And that was incredible. It was awesome.
Yeah. It's more fun to cover college football playoffs, as it turns out, than it is the non-bowl game. But it could be more fun to cover the non-bowl game than some bowl games, if you want to look at it that way. Right, Pete James?
Yeah, up for debate.
If you're going to sit 50 guys, I think I'd rather not cover the bowl game. But there are bowl games that were fun, like the Holiday Bowl. That could have been fun because...
Oh, God, we've still never been there.
Still haven't been out there.
I've been to the Independence Bowl.
He says with a badge of honor. You and Eric Hansen, right?
Yeah.
Yep. On that note, Tim Reeser has been to the Independence Bowl. If you haven't heard that story yet, you have not been listening to Irish Illustrated Insider enough, because it is a classic. Maybe you can bring it back. Hopefully not next year when it's bowl season, Tim Reeser. But until Monday, for Pete Sampson of The Athletic, John Bryce of Football Scoop, and you'll be on assignment next Monday, right, JB?
Charlotte? The FCA Coaches Convention.
Tim Reeser of Irish Illustrated. I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching and listening. Irish Illustrated Insider.